Genesis chapter 47 is where we're at, and we're going to be starting in verse 13, and of course this is part of the famine, and that's what's going on here, and dealing with Joseph and how he handles the famine that's going on in all of Egypt, and for that matter, all the world at this time. And as the famine progresses throughout the world, Joseph, of course, has to deal with people. And as you can imagine, this is what's going on. If you remember, there was going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And the plan was put in place that the government, Joseph, of course, being put in charge of the plan, would take a certain percentage of everyone's crops, which is 20%, for those 7 years and gather it together and put it in storehouses. So at the end of 7 years, there would be enough to feed the country. Well, people being what they are, throughout the years, the 7 years of plenty, what happens is, you know, nobody really believes that these things are going to, there's going to be a necessity for food. So come the time of a famine, everybody then depends upon the government. And so the food is sold with money. And people come to the government and buy the food with money, which is, if you can just, you know, fast forward to today, and if you have money, you can then go to, if the same thing were happening today, you could go then to the place where the food was being distributed and pay a certain amount, and they would give you food to take and go to eat. And sooner or later, of course, you would run out of money. And you think, well, who then would have all the money? The government. And of course, the government being the ones who issue the money. Well, the same thing then happens in Egypt. You know, the money that's in the land is issued by the government. And of course, the government is the one collecting up all the money back as they issue and supply the food to the people. So, it's a funny, and it's kind of a no-win situation for the people, in that the money supply dries up sooner or later. And that's the way economies are. If you don't have a money supply circulating, that the economy comes to a grinding halt. And that's exactly what's going on here in the land of Egypt. So Joseph has to deal with this now, where the people then have no money. And what you're going to find is that we have a lot of preconceived notions of how to deal with poverty, because you're going to find people who are in poverty, a whole population that's in poverty because they have no money. And there's also a whole population of people who are on the brink of starvation because they have no food or means of producing food. And in today's society, here in the United States, for instance, what's the solution to that? Well, the government, of course, doesn't collect up money and then hand out food. They freely distribute money to those who are without. You know, they, rather than saying, come and bring your money and we'll give you food, they send people money for no reason at all. They say, well, you are in poverty, so we'll send you money. And if you don't have food, we'll send you food also. And so that's the idea that we have going into this story of how to deal with poverty and famine, as it were. And so we have a preconceived idea, and that's not at all what happens here. And so as we read this account here in the Bible, many people are going to read it in great horror and think, Lord, how could this possibly be? Because Joseph is the one who administers the program. And Joseph, of course, being a type of Christ, this is something going to happen that you would never think would be something that would happen, especially Joseph being a type of Christ. So we will, that all having been said, let's, and the stage being set now, we'll get on with the show here. And we know that the famine has been going on at least for 2 years. As we turn back to the page just a little bit in chapter 45, I believe that's where it is, chapter 45, verse 5. Joseph says, "Now, therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send you before me to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land." So that was when he had revealed himself to his brothers. The famine had already been going on at that point for 2 years. So it's been more than 2 years at this point. And there, verse 13, Genesis chapter 47, "There was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house." So, who has all the money at this point? Pharaoh. So, when you think about that, is the money worth anything? No, it's not. Pharaoh has all the money, but really, money is only as good as what people value it as. You know, I can reach in my pocket here, and here's a $10 bill, and it says, of course, "We the people" on here, and somewhere it might even say, "In God we trust." I'm not even sure that the bills say that anymore. Yeah, it does here on the back. "In God we trust." But really, is it in God we trust as far as knowing that this is worth $10? It is not. Really, we're trusting what? We're trusting that the guy that we're going to give this to also trusts that it's worth $10. Because really, it's just a piece of paper, sort of like the paper that I'm reading off of, isn't it? And so, when Pharaoh had gathered up all the money, it was worthless because no one else had any. So, in all reality, he had a lot of money, but he really didn't have anything. So, the economy had collapsed at that point. And so, there was no money in all the land to buy anything with. And when the money failed in the land of Egypt, and quite honestly, that was the situation that we had just a few years ago, 5 years ago, in the world where the money was close to failing because people perceived it to not be worth what it was, what they perceived it to be. You know, one day they woke up and said, it's not worth what they thought it was the day before. And so that's exactly what's going on here. And so when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, "Give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence, for the money faileth?" So, you know, when you're in a situation of famine, you know, again, I can take out my $10 bill, and money's great when everything's fine and you have plenty of food around. And I can go to the store and I can buy food with this money. But when there's no food to be bought, you can't eat this $10 bill, can you, Mike? And so really, this $10 bill is no more valuable than this piece of paper here, is it? Because you can't eat this paper either. So what's really worth something? food is worth something, isn't it? The only thing that's really worth anything is food or something to produce food. So all the money had gone to buying the government grain, and the livestock was the only real portable commodity that was left and that was worth anything, that something could be, something that you could take from here to there. And if people have livestock and land to have their livestock on, they're wealthy. You think about that. You know, we've got a few chickens at the house, and we've got a little bit of land that they can roam around on and eat, and so they produce eggs. Well, if I had enough chickens and they produced enough eggs, well, I would be a wealthy man in this situation of famine, because I wouldn't be hungry, because my chickens would eat the grass, and they would make eggs, and every day me and my family would eat the eggs, and if we wanted some meat, we'd kill a chicken. And so we'd be wealthy, wouldn't we, in comparison with everybody else. So that was the situation here. They were wealthy, but they didn't really realize that, because they had livestock. But the problem with having livestock is, cattle and horses and that, is they eat grain. And grain is one of the things that nobody had, because they couldn't grow it. Well, so Joseph said, verse 16, give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fail. And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses, and for the flocks, and for the cattle of the herds, and for the asses, and he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year. So everybody gave up their livestock. So and probably it was a relief to many of the people, because they could not support their livestock, because the livestock again took grain and pasture to raise the livestock on, and the pasture wasn't any good, and there was no grain to feed the livestock, and so on and so forth. And so they got grain that they could consume instead. It was a good deal for everybody. And so that was the deal that was made. They sold their livestock. Well, what's going on here, though, is little by little, the Egyptians, the population of the Egyptians, are becoming more and more dependent upon the government by selling off their means of producing for themselves. That's exactly what's going on. If you pay attention here, they're becoming more and more dependent upon the government by becoming less and less independent. But meanwhile, of course, the livestock could have been purchased by Joseph's brothers, the Israelites. Of course, they're living in Goshen. That was where all the green grass was. It's a separate place in the land of Ramesses. And if you remember, they were the keepers of Pharaoh's flocks. Pharaoh put them in charge of his flocks, if you remember back in chapter 46, verse 34. And as we're going to find out, they, the brothers of Joseph, were relatively unaffected by this famine. If we look ahead just a little bit into verse 27 of chapter 47, Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein and grew and multiplied exceedingly. So they, rather than were dwindling away, they were growing and multiplying in their possessions and in the number of them. So they were doing very well even during this time of famine. So something's going on here. Something's going on. They are growing, and their possessions and the number of them, they're growing exceedingly, while everyone else is dwindling away during this time of famine. Well, those flocks that were purchased, many of them, some of them could have been purchased, of course, by the Israelites, and then those who were not purchased by the Israelites, of course, those that were purchased by Pharaoh, they probably would have ended up in the hands of Joseph's brothers anyway. because they were the ones who were tending Pharaoh's flocks. So either way, they would have ended up in the same place, wouldn't they? So it all turned out to be to their benefit. So then all the people who had given up, you know, given all their money for grain, and now they've given all their livestock for grain, having lived another year because of the grain that they had purchased, they come, and here they are to the point of, well, we don't have any grain, and we're going to starve. So at their own suggestion, this is their idea. It's not, you know, we have nothing, and we're begging you, but their own suggestion, they suggest that they use their land, that they sell their land and also themselves in exchange for grain, because that's the only remaining possessions that they have. And so as we pick up the story here in Genesis 47, starting in verse 18, when that year was ended, they came unto him, unto Joseph, the second year, and said unto him, we will not hide it from my Lord, how that our money is spent. My Lord also hath our herds of cattle, and there is not aught left in the sight of my Lord, but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land, buy us and our land for bread, and we and our lands will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's. So, yeah, as Betty says, what desperation. What desperation. Well, when you think about it, Betty, here's people who are on their own, who are on their own, and in a way I would liken it to somebody who's in business for themselves versus someone who is an employee for someone else. You know, these people up to this time have been like to someone who was in business for themselves, and had the responsibility of producing everything. They owned their own land. They handled their own money. They planted. They reaped, and all these things. And whatever they produced was theirs. If they produced a lot, things were fine. If they produced a little, they suffered because of it. So just like someone who is in business for themselves. You know, if things go well, you're in good shape, and if things don't go so well, you suffer because of it. Well, as their ability to produce is taken away from them because of the desperation of the situation, and they sell off their assets that help them to produce, then they get to a situation where the only possible thing that they can do is to put themselves into servitude of another man, and not only working for another person, but complete servitude and under that other man's complete care. In other words, we will be your servant to the point where if you feed us, we'll work for you. And, you know, you don't have to pay us wages. All you have to do is house us and feed us and take care of us, and then we will be yours, because we have no means of supporting ourselves whatsoever. Yeah, they had no choice but to starve and die. Exactly right. So they had given up everything, any means of liberty, and to the point where they had then given up any choice of going back on their decision, and now they had come to a point where doing what they were doing was the only choice, and it looked pretty good at that time. So as they sold their land and themselves to Pharaoh, the people then get removed from the countryside and are moved into cities. They're removed from the countryside and are moved into cities. Now, verse 21 says, "And as for the people, he removed them to cities," that being Joseph, "he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof." Boy, that just reminds me and makes me think of almost books and movies like what was H.G. Wells, 1984. That story, for instance, in that story, all of the, you know, the people get moved into cities, and you know, what happens when everybody gets moved into cities and into close quarters? Well, the reason that happens is, first of all, because the administration of food, things like that, government relief programs, is made much easier. You know, you've all seen government projects, you know, where the poor and those who are on welfare and assistance were lived for years upon years, and here in the Dayton area we still have those same projects. They look like giant apartment complexes where, you know, Section 8 housing and things like that. And they're never out in the countryside. They're always in the inner urban areas and in the cities. So it's because one of the reasons is the administration of those places is much easier in the cities. Well, there's other reasons, though, that people get moved into the cities, because removing the people, especially in this case, from their land makes the transfer of the ownership of the land permanent. If you take the people off their land and move them away from it, then the transfer of ownership is then permanent. You leave them there, well, it's not a permanent transfer, but take them off of it, well, you've given up control of your land. And speaking of control, if you put everybody together in one geographical location, then controlling people is made much easier. Any kind of rebellion or uprising of any sort is controlled and stopped much quicker and much easier if everybody's in one location than if everybody's spread out. Also, the collection of taxes is much easier, is it not, if everybody's in a central location. It's easier to make sure that no one's prospering much more than someone else, so that everybody is kept, well, at a same level, you know, at the same economic level. So there's all kinds of advantages for government to keep people in a confined geographical area. So don't make any mistake here that those who were brought in and put in one geographical area, there's lots and lots of reasons for that to happen. Only the priests did not have to give up their land among the Egyptians. Among the Egyptians, only the priests. In verse 22, "Only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore they sold not their lands." So the Israelites, the Hebrews, they kept their land because they didn't participate in the sale, and the priests, the Egyptian priests, also kept their land. But terms of the people's servitude are clearly spelled out in the deal. There's no ambiguity about what the conditions are. They're to sow the lands. They're to plant the lands after the famine is over. When they plant them, 20% belongs to Pharaoh. The rest then is for food, for fodder, that's to feed animals, and for seed for the next year. And then again, the following year, 20% is Pharaoh's, and on it goes. Then Joseph, verse 23, said unto the people, "Behold, I have bought you this day, and your land for Pharaoh. Lo, here is seed for you, and ye shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the increase that ye shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own, for seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and for food of your little ones." Now, the people are willingly grateful for their new servitude to Pharaoh. It's a strange thing that people, strange reaction that people have when they are in a bad circumstance and someone makes them a bad deal that yet looks better than what they had before. So they're willingly grateful for this bad deal and their servitude to Pharaoh. And that whole arrangement is made a law. And Moses says that when he was in Egypt, remember, he was raised as a prince in Egypt, and then, of course, after he left, he came back to free Israelites from Egyptian bondage. But that law was still in force in the days that Moses was alive in Egypt. So it persisted for years and years and years. Here in Genesis 47, verse 25 and 26, and they said, of course, this being to Joseph, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt unto this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh's. So that's as far as we're going to go this evening in Genesis chapter 47. And it's as you read those verses, again, it's you know, the first time you read them, because of the way that people are dealt with today who are poor, the poor are given money from the government, the poor are given, you know, they used to be called food stamps. It's an electronic card now that you can go to the grocery store with and buy food. But the poor are given so many benefits from the government these days and are dealt with quite differently than what we read here in the Bible. And so it's almost a shock when we read about how Joseph deals with these people who are stricken by famine, and that you know, everything that they have is taken from them in exchange for grain to save their lives. And we think, can this possibly be the same Joseph who we've been reading about? And you know this Joseph, he's supposed to be a type of Christ. And would this really be how God would treat people who are on the verge of starvation? And how would this be really how God would treat those who are poor and destitute and in this condition? Well, let me make some points here. First of all, and the first point is that neither the grain nor the financial gain that was made belonged to Joseph. But both of those belonged to Pharaoh. The grain was not Joseph's to sell or to give away, but rather it was Pharaoh's, and it was Joseph's duties to further Pharaoh's interests, which he did. And it was instructed that Joseph sell the grain, which he carried out. There was, of course, a discrepancy between the Israelites and the priests, which got to keep their land, and the general population, which ended up enslaved and had to sell everything they had, including themselves, to Pharaoh, and became servants of Pharaoh, or slaves of Pharaoh. That was a matter of grace bestowed by Pharaoh, and it was not a choice made by Joseph. Even though Joseph, if he had been able to make the choice, would have bestowed the same grace upon his family, that choice was made by Pharaoh and not by Joseph. So you cannot make the connection there. The slavery which the Egyptians submitted to was voluntary. Remember that after the people had sold their animals the year before, they came back, and they're the ones who voluntarily suggested that they give their lands and themselves in exchange for grain. So it was a giving of their lives to another, not the same kind of violent forced slavery that we so often associate, especially in this country, the kind of slavery that went on, especially prior to the Civil War. So we can't really equate the two, one with another. Remember, that kind of servitude that the Egyptians volunteered themselves for was not condemned in the Bible, or is not condemned in the Bible, even among the Israelites. If you look at Leviticus chapter 25, starting in verse 39, Leviticus says, "And if thy brother that dwelleth by thee be waxen poor, and be sold unto thee, thou shalt not compel him to serve as a bondservant, but as a hired servant, and as a sojourner, he shall be with thee, and shall serve thee unto the year of Jubilee. And then shall he depart from thee, both he and his children with him, and shall return unto his own family, and unto the possession of his father shall he return, for they are my servants, which I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as bondmen. Thou shalt not rule over him with rigor, but shall fear thy God." So, really, we shouldn't be overly concerned or lose sleep or be incredibly distressed over the actions of Joseph, especially when the Egyptians praised him as being the one who saved their lives. They were the ones who were saying, if nothing's done, we're going to die. And remember in Genesis 47:25, and they said, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." So, in the long run, they would have died a death of starvation had not the whole situation had not the whole situation gone the way it did. Another point that I really want to make is that the Egyptians' dilemma was really one of their own making. Joseph had warned everybody of 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. The entire population during the 7 years of plenty was left with 80% of everything that was produced. The government, which the government program, which was headed by Joseph, took 20% and stored that 20% for the times of famine, and left everybody with 80%, and they could have taken that 80% and stored food for the times of famine. But just like the time the people in Noah's day, they didn't seem to believe that the time of plenty would ever come to an end. And so most people, it seems, did not store up food and did not make preparations for the time of famine. And so when it got there, there was nothing on the store on the shelves. And so they were dependent upon what was put in the storehouses, the government storehouses, and put themselves in that situation. So, like I said, just like those of Noah's day who didn't think there would be a flood, those in Joseph's day didn't think there was going to be a famine either, and they didn't take heed the warning. Now, numerous times I have told you that Joseph is a type of Christ, and I've made reference to Pharaoh as a figure of the Father, and that in fact is quite true, and this is an interesting point in the book of Genesis, and an extremely interesting story in the book of Genesis. For this reason, it's because you have the 7 years of plenty followed by the 7 years of famine, and the timeline is such that it represents that which is outlined by our Lord, the 3.5 years of tribulation followed by 3.5 years of great tribulation. You have 3.5 years, which you have 2 years, if you remember that the famine had been going on, chapter 45, 5 and 6, when Joseph revealed himself to his brothers. There's approximately a half a year that passes by the time then that the people sell their cattle and livestock to the government, to Joseph, for a year's worth of grain, and then another year passes when they return and then sell themselves into slavery or servitude, which is the end of the 3.5 years, the first 3.5 years. The Israelites retain their land outside of Canaan, which of course is the promised land. Remember, the promised land is representative of the kingdom. That's the land that is promised by God, the everlasting kingdom, and it was promised to Jacob that he would, of course, return to that land, as it is promised to us that we will, of course, see that land one of these days. But they had to; these things could not come to pass inside of the promised land. They had to be outside of the promised land in order to have the tribulation and have a place to return to. If you follow the point I'm trying to drive at there, but after the first 3.5 years of tribulation, which is in the form of famine, you have the second 3.5 years of great tribulation, and that, of course, is represented by those who then sell themselves into the whole population selling themselves into servitude to one, and that caused by what is a worldwide famine. Meanwhile, you have the case of the believers, represented, of course, by the brothers of Joseph, the Israelites. They are and they are a separate and apart from the general population. They're off being blessed, if you remember correctly. Being exceedingly prosperous and all that, even during the time of famine. So the famine is not is not affecting them. So they're in a separate location from those who are being affected by the famine, and that relates to what we find in Revelation chapter 12, verse 14. The woman, of course, being the church or the group of believers, here represented, of course, by Joseph's brothers and the offspring of Jacob, were given two wings of the great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for times and half a time from the face of the serpent. So the face of the serpent, in this case, being represented by the famine. So there they are in the face of the worldwide famine, which, of course, you find in Revelation 6, 5, and 6, being the third horseman or something of that nature, and the holding the balance in his hands and all that. Jacob and his descendants are provided for by the grace of God, and that, of course, Pharaoh and Joseph being types of the Father and of the Son. Those who are not Christ, represented, of course, by the general population of the Egyptians, and those who are they did not believe that there was going to be a famine, just like those in Noah's day who did not believe that there was going to be a flood, are being affected by the famine, and it gets to be a point where they willingly give themselves to the dragon and the beast. So you only have so many players in this production, and so they, of course, there's only so much stage room. Of course, the Father and the Son also play Satan and the beast in this play, because during the time of tribulation there is a counterfeit father and a counterfeit son, being the dragon, of course, being Satan, and the beast, the so-called Antichrist, and they sell their souls, as it were, to him, and we can kind of guess as to what the conditions are and why. What would lead them to what would lead people to sell their souls? And here we find people are faced with a famine back here in the book of Genesis. That could very well be the thing that would lead people to sell their souls in a future time of crisis also. So if you read in Revelation 13, starting in verse 1, John says, "I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having the seven heads and 10 horns, upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was unto a leopard, and his feet the feet of a bear, and his mouth the mouth of a lion. And the dragon," that, of course, being Satan, "gave him his power and his seat and great authority." So here you see the counterfeit father and the counterfeit son. "And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast, and they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there were given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 3.5 years, 40 and 2 months. So it's this 40 and 2 months. Something is in fact a motivator for people to worship this beast and the dragon. And as Job says, or as Satan says, I guess, here in Job 2:4, hunger and different things. The flesh is a huge motivator. We read Job 2:4. Satan answers the Lord and says, "Yea, skin for skin. Yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life." Well, you just saw that to be true. All that a man has will he give for his life, and that's exactly what you read in Genesis 47, people giving everything they had, including themselves, for food to eat. And just like the Egyptians back there, people will give anything to save their own skin. And so, if you read the next few verses in Revelation 13, you read about the beast. He opens his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and all them that dwell in heaven. It was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given over him over all kindreds, tongues, and nations, and all that dwell on the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of the life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. People willingly, gratefully give themselves in worship and allegiance to this this duo here of the Satan and the beast. No different than when people who were on the verge of starvation came and said to Joseph, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." So, people will do all kinds of things in the face of hardship and hunger and dilemmas that they see no answer to. So when it's the flesh that is on the line, just like Satan pointed out in Job, all that a man hath will he give for his life, that you can take to the bank. And so let not that lesson pass over you, that's exactly what's going on there. And so all of those things that we learned in Genesis are valuable lessons.